Some things shouldn't be transparent, like stop signs. But what you pay for should always be clear, like Hiller's True Transparency Pricing. Always clearly itemized and never any hidden fees. Because you have the right to know what you're paying for. For more information, visit happyhiller.com/true transparency pricing. Happy you'll be, or the service is free.
Call the Happy Face Truck today.
Our Peter Gabriel is John McClain. He joins us now in the Midday 180. John, how are you?
I'm doing great, guys. How are you?
Draft week is finally here. That we're great because we can finally really dive in and discuss what's going to happen this week, not what's going to happen in 5 or 6 weeks from now.
I think everybody's glad it's here. You know, it's paralysis by overanalysis, they say, and I know I'm turning in my 10th and final mock draft tomorrow morning, and it's the one that I consider my official mock draft, and I think if I get 5 right, I'll be happy.
John, can you give us a little tease and tell us who you have the Titans taking at 25 in that official mock draft?
I think I'm going to have Rashawn Evans. He's great against the run. He can rush the passer. He can play inside, outside. He can move around. So I have him coming there.
Phone lines are open if you want to jump in. Any football question for John McClain, if you want to ask about your favorite team, any draft story out there, you can ask it right now to John McClain, 615-737-1045, 737-1045. John, with the latest news out there, do you think there's a chance that Baker Mayfield ends up as the number one overall pick by Cleveland?
No, absolutely not. I've only heard that one place, and that was Adam Schefter last week. Adam was saying, looked like there's a possibility Brady might not be back because he hasn't told him. And then in the same story, he said, but all of his people close to him say he'll be there. And then his agent told Adam, of course he'll be there, playing, wants to keep playing multiple years. Not a thing has changed with Brady. So I don't believe most of what I hear or read. You can say anything you want right now, and there's not going to be any repercussions. As long as you say could or should, you can say, hey, I didn't say it was going to happen. I said it was being discussed.
There's a lot of talk that John Dorsey is keeping this under his hat in the Browns building, where Hugh Jackson doesn't know what they're going to do and won't know until Wednesday night. That maybe even Haslam doesn't know, which is hard to believe. What do you believe about his ability and desire to maybe keep this a secret? And that seems largely based on the fact that Hugh Jackson obviously has some high-level media friends and doesn't necessarily play things close to the vest.
Yeah, which would be so insulting to Hugh Jackson. And then that, of course, is another one of those anonymous stories. And I saw an anonymous story today that said Hugh Jackson played an instrumental role in John Dorsey getting the job. So I can't imagine any general manager would not tell his head coach who he's going to draft because the head coach has to coach it. And the head coach doesn't have to play him. Haslam the same way. And so I don't buy for a second, and I'm sure after it's over, Hugh Jackson will say, of course I knew who we were going to draft.
Quick bit of news. This is from Jim Toth, who is a sports talk radio host in Winnipeg. He is saying that I'm hearing game one between Jets and Preds will be Friday night, not Thursday night, as I guessed. Schedule should be out officially tonight or tomorrow morning. Again, that not official. But Jim Toth, who's a sports talk radio host in Winnipeg, I believe works with the Jets Network, also saying he's hearing that the game, or game one, will be Friday night here in Nashville.
615-737-1045, our number. Before we get to the NFL headlines, Sam has called in with a great discussion for John McClain. Sam, go right ahead.
Hey, John, love your input and everything that you do.
Thank you, Sam.
Every week.
Thank you very much.
Yeah, I just got a quick question. What does the inevitable loss of George H.W. and Barbara, what does that have to, I mean, how does that impact, you know, the Houston landscape, you know, sports and non-sports?
I'll tell you about sports. George and Barbara were huge sports fans. And, you know, George has been in a wheelchair for quite a while. They come to Texans games. they sit in Bob McNair, the owner's suite. They get picked up with one of those big, long golf carts that takes them and the Secret Service to the elevator that goes up. They used to go to a lot of Astros games, but where you sit there, they have to sit in a suite because of his wheelchair. Same with the Rockets. But they were serious, serious sports fans here, beloved by all the teams and all the fans. So as you can imagine, that funeral that she got was wall-to-wall coverage here by all our TV stations. Chronicle put a whole section on it. It was almost like she was a former president. She got so much respect.
She kept a lot of, I saw a tweet of a picture of a scorecard when they went to Astros games. She often kept score, and they often left at the seventh inning, and it was a scorecard, well done, complete through seven innings that she had given, signed and gave somebody.
She was doing. She loved to keep score, and she had her own little system that people knew exactly what it was.
John, though, first I have to ask, how about that third quarter last night for your Houston Rockets? 50 points.
It was amazing because they hadn't played as well as they did in regular season in that series. And I was thinking in halftime, what's happened to the Rockets? They blew out the Timberwolves in three games and won the fourth one by nine. And then all of a sudden, when they came out for the third quarter led by James Harden, they were they were on a pace for 200 points. So soon the old Rockets are back. They ought to beat them tomorrow night and be well rested for the next round.
John, is anything short of a championship a disappointment for the Rockets this year?
Yes, Chad. They have put themselves in a position to where they had such a great regular season, had the best record by far, that people now, if they don't win the championship, they're going to be devastated. And there's a good chance that when, you know, everybody thinks the Warriors, once Steph Curry gets healthy, that the Warriors have just kind of been biding their time, waiting for the playoffs, that even if they lose to the Warriors, considering the Rockets have home court advantage, people are going to be really upset because in regular season they were a better team.
John, the Bills have tried many times to try to move up more in this draft. The Giants have not budged with the number two pick. What do you have the Giants doing Thursday night?
I don't predict trades, so I've had the Giants going with a quarterback, but I'm going to change it. I've spent too much time reading and listening. It seems to me that a new general manager and a new coach, especially an offensive-oriented coach whose quarterbacks were his specialty, would like to take a quarterback to start their careers with the Giants. But Eli Manning has been durable. He's healthy. He's 37. He wants to play a few more years. If you were to take a quarterback and then at some point you had to play him because of the team being so bad, you could trade Eli at the trading deadline first week of November. But I think I'm going to have them taking Saquon Barkley. I still believe there's a really good chance they're going to trade out. They could be asking Buffalo for both ones and a two.
How good is Barkley in your eyes compared to, say, Gurley, Fournette, Elliott?
He is a higher-rated prospect coming out than they were. And I can't remember a running back, Paul, going back that was this highly rated. Maybe Barry Sanders, I'm not sure. But the fact that he's got great size, speed, great receiver, great characteristics, personality, great teammate, everything you want. He has no weakness other than the fact people seem to devalue running backs. But look what Gurley, Fournette, and Ezekiel Elliott have done for their teams. And then the argument is, well, look at Kareem Hunt, led the league in rushing, third-round pick. Look at Alvin Kamara. He's a third-round pick, and he was NFL Offensive Rookie of the Year. So there's good, sound arguments to be made on both sides. But a running back, as you guys know, can control so much because he touches the ball so many times. I would take Saquon Barkley over Bradley Chubb, I can tell you that.
615-737-1045. Number, what do you think the Bills do?
I think the Bills are going to do everything they can to trade up if they stay where they are. In their first pick, I think they're going to take a guard or a center or somebody could play both positions like James Daniel of Iowa. And maybe with their second pick, they take a quarterback like Mason Rudolph from Oklahoma State. I think Lamar Jackson will be gone.
They're currently at 12.
I think Jackson's going to go 11 to Miami if somebody doesn't trade up to get him.
And what do you think, Miami, if they bring in a quarterback, I mean, is it straight out the end of Tannehill? Does Tannehill become the space holder or have a legitimate chance? He's not going to compete with a first-round quarterback.
Now, I think he'll be the space holder till the quarterback's ready. I don't think any of those first four will be there when they pick. You know, it could be Buffalo trades with them. Arizona could trade up. Arizona's acting very quiet. Steve Keim has been acting like it's way too much to trade up. But the fact is, if you look at the teams that traded up last year, Chicago, Kansas City, and Houston for quarterbacks, they're all very, very happy and will do that those deals again in a heartbeat.
So,
Vince traded up. Goff traded up.
So if Miami goes quarterback at 11, and they don't trade out, Buffalo, you say you think they go guard, right?
I think a guy who can play guard and center because they've lost another center to health reasons, and Incognito's such a flake, you don't know what's going to happen to him. They traded Cordy Glenn at tackle, so their offensive line needs help.
Man, when I look at the top 12, I wonder if it's too high for a James Daniels, Isaiah Wynn, or like a Will Hernandez.
It's way too high for them.
So who would be that second guard you're referring to? Or is that where you have Nelson guard, going?
Well, the second guard would be Isaiah Wynn. No, there's no way Nelson's going to be available there. He's just too good of a prospect. You know, people that bypass him for other positions or just because they're devaluing guard. And, you know, at the combine, when he asked, why don't people put more emphasis on center and guards, because the shortest path to the quarterback is up the middle, nobody really had a good answer.
Is 8 the obvious spot for Quentin Nelson with the Bears, with a tie-in with his offensive line coach, Harry Hiestand from Notre Dame, now being the offensive line coach of Chicago?
That's where everybody has him going, to the Bears, and the Bears can certainly use him. And if I'm Indianapolis and I'm there at 6 and I've got Andrew Luck and I'm thinking, what can I do to help Andrew Luck? You know, do I get a receiver? None's worth it. Quentin Nelson would be a great pick for them at 6. There's a lot of talk about them taking Roquan Smith, the linebacker from Georgia. But if I'm them, I'm doing everything I can to help Luck, and I would take Nelson right there.
Yeah, I would lean towards Quentin Nelson with the Colts as well. The Colts, though, John, I think if I were just predicting a mock draft, I would have a team trading up to 6. I think the Colts would move down again.
Chris Ballard would like to have more picks. You know, John Elway said he's open to trading, but everybody's sure they're going to take a quarterback because the contract they gave Case Keenum is only for 2 years. And so I'm pretty sure they're going to do it. And I'm not so sure Cleveland wouldn't trade down a few more spots too.
Well, think about with the Colts. If the Colts wanted to trade down, let's say that the Giants and Broncos either both take a quarterback or they trade out and teams move up to take a quarterback in those spots. And the Colts sit at 6. They can trade down again and still, if they swap with Buffalo, for instance, at 12, if Buffalo wants the quarterback, the Colts are still getting an elite defender at 12 by trading down 6 more spots.
They could get Roquan Smith. They
yeah.
could get Vita Vea. They could get Tremaine Edmonds. They could really enhance their defense at that spot.
And then if you don't have one of those teams ahead of you take a QB, then you have a bidding war for the team that wants to move up to 6 to get the next guy in line. They're in a good spot again.
They are in a good spot, and I think Chris Ballard would like to maximize that.
Oklahoma quarterback Baker Mayfield with his comments about the Chargers. He said he didn't take a look at the Chargers playbook as much as he should have. He said he was prioritizing which playbooks he was going to learn. No offense to them, but I've got a lot on my plate. And then yesterday, Tom Telesco, the GM of the Chargers, had a great line. When he was asked about it, he said, I'm probably not prepared to comment on that. My plate's pretty full. No offense.
What a great line. Isn't that a great line? Those are the kind of things that make you wonder about Mayfield, the immaturity. He's being honest, but sometimes it's not the best policy. Just put a lid on it. And in that kind of thing, especially this close to the draft, worries a lot of people.
John, what do you think about Dallas as a host city for this NFL draft? They expect close to 270,000 people at different spots for this draft this weekend. What are your thoughts on Dallas and how they'll be as a host city?
Well, truthfully, it's Arlington, and Arlington's right between Dallas and Fort Worth, and they'll get people from both. And they have the space for it because they have a humongous parking lot there, because they got the Rangers ballpark is there as well. They've got construction going now because of that new baseball field that's going to be connected with shops and restaurants to AT&T Stadium. But knowing Jerry Jones and how he wants this to be the biggest and the best, so everybody, you know, that's not AT&T Stadium, it's Jerry World. And people ask me if I'm coming up there Thursday. I tell them, heck no, I don't want to, number one, be around 250,000 fans, and especially at least 225,000 Cowboy fans. So I'll be right there in front of my TV with everybody else. But I think they'll put on a great show. They want it to be good. They want it to be different. But mainly, it's just going to be big. But more power to them. I would love to see. I think the next one will probably end up in Canton or Cleveland. But I do know this. There's a lot of talk about the Titans. And I'm sure Amy Adams Strunk is doing everything she can to get it there. I think Nashville will be a great city for the draft.
We were talking earlier that Hutton had a nugget that there are over 2,000 credentials for the draft. And I was saying very few of those credentials are going to beat people. I mean, maybe Browns reporters are down there. But, I mean, there's not a lot to get outside of seeing stuff. And then the guy picked by your team is quickly back in your city. So the bulk of this 2,000 people to me are scene-setting types and college football types who are maybe seeing their guy for the last time, sending him off to whatever pro destination he's going to. It's not much to be gained for people like me and you being there.
No, and I think most of those are TV, because you got the NFL Network, you got Fox, and you got ESPN all televising from a stadium's got 100,000 people. It's going to be tremendous overkill. I was told that, like, on a Monday night or a Sunday night game, they got to give them like 400 credentials because of all the people involved in putting on that production. So you can imagine how much those three networks are going to have there. And not to mention, there's a lot of websites, you know, national people that go from the websites, but old-fashioned newspaper people at heart, they're, you know, you're staying with your team. And if the Texans, last time I went to New York, and I went 14 years, was when they had the number one pick, which is Devion Clowney. And I loved it when it was in New York, but I've had no interest going to AT&T Stadium in Arlington and fighting that traffic.
What did you think? I saw it from Peter King's Monday morning quarterback column, but it was from Awful Announcing and through another website, a column about how the NFL envisions eventually the NFL draft being treated by networks like a presidential election.
Well, they can dream on. That is so pretentious, preposterous to think that all stations are going to get away from their primetime programming and all of them put on the NFL draft. I think that is one of the dumbest things I've ever heard.
Yeah, they could see a day where, well, this will be the first year where all seven rounds will be on a broadcast television network. It will either be on Fox or ABC.
And that's fine, but I'll guarantee you, you're not going to see, since one of the networks doesn't have the NFL, because, let's see, who doesn't? No, they all have it. When NBC didn't have it, they got out when Fox got in, they always wanted one network to not have the NFL to drive up the bidding, and of course now all of them had it. But I think they would have to do Saturday, Sunday to get that done, because I don't see networks passing up their primetime programming.
John, which broadcast do you prefer when you're sitting at home watching on television?
I watch ESPN. Sometime I'll do split screen and watch NFL Network. And I'm curious about Fox this year just to see it's different. But I just seem to like ESPN because even though they've had a lot of changes, it's just out of habit.
John, Josh Allen went on Pro Football Talk and the TV show and said that his inaccuracy has been blown out of proportion. He was asked by Florio what ongoing chatter has bothered him the most, and Allen said the inaccuracy issue. Going back to college, having 56% completion percentage, obviously it's not great, but I think that's a little blown out of proportion. I do think that I'm accurate. Do you buy into anything? He's saying that his feet were jacked up in college, and then he's improved on that.
In high school, from the time he was a starter through junior college through Wyoming, he's never completed 60% of his passes. And that's in different offenses. That's with different coaches and different teammates. And the one constant through all those years is Josh Allen. I would be very concerned about that.
Inaccurate guys are incredibly defensive about being inaccurate. Generally speaking.
They are. But it's easy to chart because you see it, and a guy with a big arm like him who's going to throw more balls down the field, that runs the risk of being even more inaccurate.
The best thing I've seen on this subject was a tweet from Brian Billick, who said that the big mistake they made in Baltimore when they're drafting, was it Kyle Bowler?
Kyle Bowler, yeah.
When they were drafting Kyle Bowler was to adjust his grade based on the lack of talent around him, to think that part of the reason he wasn't as good as he should have been was because the talent around him wasn't on par with whatever, which is a lot of what you hear Josh Allen apologists saying about Wyoming in his final year there.
And Kyle Bowler had a great arm. I remember, I guess it was his pro day, he got on his knees and threw a ball like 70 yards, and they said, well, that's great if you ever need to throw from your knees, and he turned out to be bomb out.
Well, am I right in thinking that, like, Matthew Stafford, for instance, did not have a great completion percentage at Georgia? It wasn't in the 60s.
He was below 60%, and I don't know if it was 1 year or his entire career. I can't remember, but people use that as an example. You know, there's always going to be
Matt Ryan
to everything. Always going to be exceptions. I'd like to go back and see, were they below 60% every year they started going back to high school?
I think one of the problems with Allen that at least I've seen is the lack of touch on some of these passes. You know, everything is a bullet. I would imagine there were some broken fingers throughout the careers of some of the wide receivers and tight ends he was throwing to.
Stafford went 52.7%, 55.7%, 61.4% trended upward through his career at Georgia.
And which is a good sign, of course.
So you both see Allen as a bust.
I don't like him at all.
I don't see him as a bust. I just wouldn't take him up in the first five picks.
I see him as a bust.
Like not no playoffs, no out of the league like Osweiler, or I mean,
I just don't think. I think he'll turn out to be a 4 year guy who we weren't very impressed with, who winds up a journeyman backup with a big arm and doesn't do much.
John, when you look at some of the post combine injuries, is Maurice Hurst the most intriguing player that you're following to see where he slots in this first round?
He and Leighton Vander Esch, who had neck surgery in 2016 and wears a one of those cervical braces when he plays. That scared some teams. Maurice Hurst would be a high pick. And, you know, they say he played with his heart issue. Some teams have taken him off the board, but everybody seems to think he's still going in the first round. But that's scary. Wouldn't surprise me if he didn't fall.
Maurice Hurst, Paul, do you see him late first round because of all that?
I mean, I think the heart stuff has been clarified.
Because he was cleared to work out for teams later on.
Yeah. I don't think his stock is going to wind up being that far down based on the medical stuff. And I think probably somebody's going to get a good value with him. It's not sexy. You know, like an interior offensive lineman.
John, the Titans are having Vince Young and Wesley Woodyard announce their second and third round picks. Who's announcing for the Texans?
You know, truthfully, I don't have any idea. I never keep up with that.
There's going to be a parrot involved in announcing Tampa Bay's pick. The Cardinals, I think, are doing something on Route 66. I mean, are we getting to performance art for all of these things? And do we think that's really appealing to people on TV?
It's so appealing, all the networks are going to broadcast 24-7 on the draft.
Like the presidential election. Yeah.
Gil Brandt, by the way, he said in a tweet, and this is coming from the czar of NFL draft. He says that it's hard these days to overhype an NFL draft, but I think people will be talking about this one for a long time. What do you take of that coming from Brandt?
Well, he usually puts out stuff like that before every draft.
Really?
People went back and looked at his timeline. I think you'd find Gil putting out something like that before every draft.
And he's a Dallas guy, right? I mean, is that where he's from?
Yes, he's from there. He actually lives in Dallas, but he goes to Cowboy home games, and he and Jerry have a really good relationship now. They didn't for a while when Gil got fired, but they treat him like royalty there.
John, Pete Carroll says that the Seahawks are still considering signing Colin Kaepernick. Do you buy it?
No, and he should have just, I don't know, that just gets people thinking that they still might, and I don't think they will be shocked. They do need a backup quarterback, though, that's for sure.
What's the benefit of having people think they still might if ultimately they will not? I don't get it.
Especially before the draft.
Any benefit at all. Nothing.
And John Lynch says if Reuben Foster is found guilty of domestic violence, he will not be a part of the team. Props to him for saying that. How many GMs across the league would do the same?
Well, first of all, according to Florio on Pro Football Talk, the woman that he beat up may not testify, and if she doesn't testify, he can't be convicted.
That's sad.
So he could have done it and still not be convicted. We see that.
And still be on the roster. Yeah. Right.
Yeah, be
like
interesting.
Greg Hardy, the woman that testified to him, then she wouldn't. She disappeared because he'd given her money. And I don't blame women taking the money.
I think you're about to ask my follow-up, Paul. Go ahead.
Well, it'll be interesting to see what San Francisco does because everybody in the world has him taken, Roquan Smith or Edmonds.
Well, my follow-up to that is, so you have John Lynch who says if Reuben Foster is found guilty of this, he's not going to be on our roster. Reuben Foster will be signed by another team. Imagine being the GM who signs Reuben Foster after John Lynch says a guy that commits domestic violence can't be on our team.
General managers always find a way around it, and the fact is if the guy plays, then his deep fans will cheer him, give him standing ovation.
Yeah. Also, Hutt, I like the sentiment, but I saw the headlines. I didn't read the specifics. If he said, will not be on our team if found guilty. There are a lot of ways for him.
Proven true is what he said.
Proven true. Okay. That's better than found guilty because we know there's a lot of ways for him not to be found guilty where he may still
be guilty. He faces three felony charges.
Pay off the victim.
Yeah, could also plea.
If proven true is what he is the way he said.
Yeah, that's good. That's hard to wiggle out of.
John, thank you as always. Let's catch up on Friday after round one.
Thank you guys very much as always.
John McClain with us twice a week, Tuesdays and Fridays.